right, folks, welcome to According to Sam. This is episode 203. Thank you so much for tuning in, watching, listening. Well, I had said we're going to get into talking more about Richard Nixon, talking about the decade of the 90s, going further into explaining what I believe the war in Ukraine is about, really. I think we may be able to get to that towards the end of this podcast. We're not going to start with that. As I told you in the last podcast, I'm going to stop foreshadowing what I'm going to talk about because who knows. And what I'm going to start with in this podcast, I think is really important. And I don't think it's going to take up the entire podcast. So we'll get to Nixon at the end of the podcast and pick it up in the next podcast. And in the beginning of this podcast, you're going to get a lot of the Bill Maher show. I have a lot of Bill Maher clips in the first part of this podcast that I want to play. I'm not a real big fan of Bill Maher. I don't think he's smart, quite frankly. I think that he is a gatekeeper, a company man to a large extent. You know, the only reason that I'm playing these clips is because of his guests. I think that he has great guests that he books. He doesn't ever book anyone who's going to really challenge him, but he does have some good guests who disagree with him at times. And one of those guests that he has had on his show before, but he had on his show just a few weeks ago, I guess it was 2 months ago, well, last month, in the beginning of March is what the date is on this. And her name is Bata Unger Sargon. And Bata is a... she's the opinion editor for Newsweek, and she's written several books about what's going on in this country as far as income inequality, the class, the struggle between the classes, the upper class and the lower class, and she's basically said that our politics, it's not about white, black. It's not about demographics and all of these things that Democrats are telling you that our politics is about. She makes the case that our politics are about class. And I want you to listen to this clip. This was her on the Bill Maher show back in March, early March.
The election is going to be now. The Democrats want to run on abortion and, shall we say, other ick issues related, the embryos, that kind of stuff, contraception. The Republicans want to run on immigration. And I saw in a poll recently, and this is an issue they ask every presidential year, like, who do you think supports you as, like, the kind of, I can't remember how they phrase it, but, like, the common man? Mm-hmm. Who feels your
working class
kind of question?
Who feels your plane?
The Republicans are encroaching on that. And that should be the Democrats' turf, I feel. My reading it always was that what I was just talking about with the school thing, the Republicans always get voters on social issues. They don't like that stuff. They don't like, oh, I can't find out if my child is transitioning, those kind of issues. The economic issues, you seem to say, and I don't get this, that is friendly turf for the Republicans, because I feel that's where the Democrats are doing better for the real people. And they don't advertise it very well, but that should be their territory.
So before Trump, you had two parties. You had the GOP, which was the party of the rich, the party of corporations, the party of tax cuts.
Country clubs.
Rockefeller Republicans.
Right, is what working class people will call it.
Party of business.
And then you had the Democrats. Now, the Democrats used to be the party of labor. They used to be the party of the working class 50, 60 years ago. But they lost those voters to the college-educated elites and then the dependent poor.
Elites.
So the Democratic Party now is bifurcated, right? They cater to college-educated, credentialed elites and then to people
elites.
Who are poor and live on the government and cannot support themselves. What that meant was there was no party representing 60% of Americans who are working class, middle class, working really hard, trying to make it. Trump showed up and he spoke directly to those people. And I'm sorry, Bill, but he made a difference for them. He changed the calculation.
Didn't.
Let me tell you why.
He spoke it. He didn't do it.
Let me tell you why. When he showed up, there was a handshake agreement between both parties on free trade. Remember NAFTA? That was the Democrats, okay?
That was not only the Democrats. I mean, yes, it was the Democrats, but namely the Democrat that is in the White House right now. Joe Biden voted for NAFTA. Yes, she's 100% right that free trade, that the Democrats embraced free trade, and Joe Biden was one of the main proponents of free trade. Not only NAFTA, the Transit Pacific Partnership, trade normalizing the trade relations with China, all the things that offshore jobs overseas, our manufacturing base overseas, Joe Biden voted for and supported. And that is what hollowed out the middle class. Everything that Bata is saying here is absolutely correct. And remember, I played the clip a few weeks ago of George W. Bush at the White Tie event with the New York elite. And he says, yes, the elite is my base. Listen.
This is an impressive crowd, the haves and the have-mores. Some people call you the elite. I call you my base.
Yeah, so that was the Republican Party. The base of the Republican Party was the elite. Now, the Democratic Party, the base of the Democratic Party is the elite, is what Bata is saying. And now the Republican Party is more representative of the working class, is attracting working class voters. And she explains why.
Country clubs, okay? The Chamber of Commerce,
right?
Is what working class people will call it.
Party of business.
And then you had the Democrats. Now, the Democrats used to be the party of labor. They used to be the party of the working class 50, 60 years ago. But they lost those voters to the college-educated elites and then the dependent poor.
Right.
So the Democratic Party now is bifurcated, right? They cater to college-educated, credentialed elites and then to people who are poor and live on the government and cannot support themselves. What that meant was there was no party representing 60% of Americans who are working class, middle class, working really hard, trying to make it. Trump showed up and he spoke directly to those people. And I'm sorry, Bill, but he made a difference for them. He changed the calculation.
Let me tell you why. He spoke it. He didn't do it.
Let me tell you why. When he showed up, there was a handshake agreement between both parties on free trade. Remember NAFTA? That was the Democrats, okay? That was the Democrats changing from representing the working class to representing the elites, right? Now the Democrats represent 9 of the 10 richest counties in America. Did you know that 65% of Americans who make more than $500,000 a year now vote Democrat?
Stop yelling at me.
I'm sorry. No, I'm
So everything she's saying is 100% correct. And this is her, again, in the overtime segment. And she's reiterating and makes another couple of really great points here that I want to highlight.
People, the kids and Muslim voters like this don't want him supporting Israel. Many other people do. What are your thoughts?
I think that the media really, really wants to put this narrative out there that Biden is going to lose Michigan over Gaza, when the truth is he's going to lose Michigan over 600,000 auto workers. Because his EV market was extremely punishing to auto workers. And like we said earlier, there's been this big realignment where working class Americans are very, very, very much on the Trump train, people who used to be Democrats and used to vote for Democrats. And rather than admit that, this outrage that Democrats lost the working class vote and try to figure out how we can appeal to them again, They're looking for excuses and other things to blame, like, oh, this war in Gaza, or they'll call them deplorables, or they'll call them racists, you know, because they don't want to admit that Trump has picked up a lot of the policies that used to be Democratic policies in the 90s, like controlling the border, for example. The idea that an open border and mass migration is extremely punishing to the working class.
To working class people. To class working.
It's class warfare against the working class.
It's class warfare against the working class. She's 100% right that the open borders affect the middle class and the poor workers more than the elites, and this is class warfare, and she has identified it 100% accurately. 100% accurately. So again, this was just a few weeks ago. This was the first week in March that she was on the Bill Maher show. And then 4 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, Bill Maher does his new rules on a separate show. And it seems like that everything that Bata was saying to him, not only Bata, he also had, what's the guy's name? Coleman Hughes or Coleman, I think it's Hughes, the guy, black guy who wrote the book about how the left is using DEI and racism and basically fragmenting us on racial lines when it should be class lines. So he had that guy on his program as well. And Coleman's been on, he was on The View, he was on the Joe Rogan show. He's been on everywhere talking about this very issue. So Bill Maher does his new rules 3 weeks ago, and it seems like from his new rules that what Bata was saying to him, what Coleman was saying to him, and then just looking at the statistics, looking at the poll numbers, looking at in what's happening in the world, this is a little bit of his new rules. Take a listen to what he says.
It's not working for them or for us. Democrats are hemorrhaging the very voters they think they're pandering to. The Financial Times writes, Democrats are going backwards faster with voters of color than any other demographic, and suggests the reason is that a less racially divided America is an America where people vote more based on their beliefs than their identity. Exactly. Far left liberals are living in an old paradigm. Americans don't fit into neat little boxes anymore. Who has the number one country song right now? Beyonce.
All right, and then he goes on to say this. Take a listen. Hold on, make sure. Okay, yeah.
I have the time. My point is, look, you're still building your politics around slicing and dicing people into these fixed categories. Democrats need to get the memo that you can't win elections anymore by automatically assuming you're going to get every voter who's not these guys.
Basically saying that this was the old Republican Party. This is the Republican Party, old white guys, businessmen, the elite that George Bush says, you know, this is our base. This is the old Republican Party. And basically, Bill Maher seems to be reiterating what Coleman Hughes was saying on his show, what Bata was saying on his show, is that, look, it's not about race anymore. It's not about demographics. It's about class. It's about
these guys.
Listen.
The more you obsess over identity, the more you ignore the bread and butter issues that win and lose elections. The real issue is class, not race. And the real gap is the diploma divide. And the real future of the party and maybe democracy depends on Democrats figuring that out.
So he basically, it's crazy because this is, I mean, Bata was on his show 4 weeks later saying the exact same thing that he says, it's not race, it's class. He kind of clashes with her on the show. Then he has Coleman Hughes on who says the same thing. And then he, you know, says it in his new rules like it's his idea. Oh, it's class and not race, that we have a class warfare problem in the United States now. You understand what I'm saying? This guy's a clown. He doesn't give Coleman Hughes or Bata credit for this. He acts like it's his idea. It's hilarious.
Win and lose elections. The real issue is class, not race.
Oh, yeah.
The real gap is the diploma divide.
Oh, it's...
And the real future of the party, and maybe democracy, depends on Democrats figuring that out.
Yeah, it's a class issue now. It's a class issue now. So... on this past weekend, in the overtime segment, he had Captain Kirk on his show, and they start talking about inflation and the latest inflation numbers that came out last week, and we talked about it on Friday, and that the economy's not doing great. And I want you to take a listen to this segment from this past week where they talk about inflation.
Okay, so how will persistent inflation affect Biden's prospects this fall? Badly. Mm.
Duh.
Does it counteract all the other positive economic news? Well, you know, every time I point out the positive economic news, somebody yells at me in some sort of...
But
somebody
wait a
write
minute.
Something
wait a
like,
minute.
Oh, sure, it's fine for you, Bill Maher, with your private jets.
Yeah, but...
So, listen to what he's saying. So, so he's going back to the segment that he did a few weeks ago, because he starts off that segment saying that Joe Biden's not doing that bad. Things are here. I'll let you listen to a little bit.
We need to stop talking about the things that make Americans different from each other and start honoring the things that make us the same. So let my people, the Irish, lead the way, because, again, the Irish thing, I don't give a shit.
I don't think this is the one. Hold on. Let me see. I think. It is this.
And finally, new rule, being obsessed with your mental health is bad for your mental health. I've been thinking a lot lately about a puzzle many are struggling with. Why are Biden's approval ratings so low when things are generally pretty good? Now, of course, there are problems. America's a big place. But wages are rising. Unemployment is negligible. The stock market is soaring. We somehow brushed off both the Trump presidency and the pandemic. Yes, inflation persists for a lot of things, but... You know, an actual good, nice-sized TV now costs $60. Who gets credit for that?
So he was roasted. Bill Maher was roasted for this segment that he did. This was 4 weeks ago in his new rules. So I think that's what he's talking about in this past week when he had Captain Kirk on. And he's talking about saying that every time I point out the good news in the economy, then I get backlash, you know, oh, you're rich. Of course, the economy's not bad for you. You know, you're a millionaire is basically what he's saying. So I think that what happened was when he gave that that new rules bit of 4 weeks ago and said, oh, things are not that bad, that he got roasted. I saw a couple of other really prominent people roasting him about that, about his $60 TV comment and all of that. So I think that's what he's talking about here, that every time I bring up how good the economy is or the good news, that I get backlash. And I think that that's what he's talking about, that the segment that he gave 4 weeks ago saying that things are not that bad, that he got roasted for it, and he absolutely did.
Are we sure Marjorie Taylor Greene is not an alien?
Badly.
Mm. Duh.
Does it counteract all the other positive economic news? Well, you know, every time I point out the positive economic news, somebody yells at me in some sort of...
But
somebody
wait a
write
minute.
Something
wait
like, oh, sure, it's fine for you, Bill Maher, with your private jets.
Yeah, but... What is inflation? I mean, how high does inflation have to be before it's inflation?
It's when eggs cost more.
It's what?
It's when eggs.
Now listen to this. Listen to this. Look at two multimillionaires, and Captain Kirk here says, you know, what is inflation? Is inflation that bad? You know, but they don't. Again, this is what Bill Maher was talking about, that he got roasted the week before when he's, you know, pretending like everything's fine. It's just a little bit of inflation. That's what Captain Kirk says here too. It's just a little bit of inflation. You know, people are making too much of a big deal about it.
That's what people are upset about.
I know, but salaries are going up too.
Yes, they are.
It's a peculiar situation. There isn't.
It's not a peculiar situation. It's not a peculiar situation. It's a horrible situation for a lot of people and a lot of families that aren't millionaires like you, Captain Kirk, and you, Bill Maher.
Salaries are going up, too.
Yes, they are.
It's a peculiar situation. It isn't that bad, and they're just making it sound bad.
It isn't that bad. They're just making it seem bad, is what the multimillionaire Captain Kirk says. And then Bill Maher tells him, don't say that, because Bill Maher knows that he's going to get roasted the same way that Bill Maher got roasted for his monologue a few weeks earlier, because these guys are out of touch. These guys are out of touch. They're out of touch.
65% of Americans who make more than $500,000 a year now vote Democrat.
They're out of touch. They're completely out of touch. So that's why Bill Maher is telling him, don't say that. Don't say it's not that bad, because the people that are dealing with these hardships of this inflation are going to come after you, because they're going to say that you don't identify with what's going on in the working class, because you're not working class, Captain Kirk, okay? Neither are you, Bill Maher. So that's why Bill Maher tells him, don't say that.
It's what?
It's when eggs cost more. That's what people are upset
eggs.
About.
I know, but salaries are going up, too.
Yes, they are.
It's a peculiar situation. It isn't that bad, and they're just making it sound bad.
Don't say that. They'll yell at you. I'm telling you, you don't want to say that.
No, no.
You mean to say is...
They only yell at you when you define who they is.
No, what you really want to say is, like, everybody should be a millionaire, and everybody should.
Mm-hmm. Everyone should be a millionaire. That's what you really want to say, is that everyone should be a millionaire. If we were all millionaires, we'd be able to afford Bidenomics. We'll be able to afford this inflation and the fact that everything costs more if we were all millionaires. That's Bill Maher's answer.
I don't want to say that.
No, no.
What you mean to say is...
They only yell at you when you define who they is.
No, what you really want to say is, like, everybody should be a millionaire, and everybody should. Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I mean, look, I've been rich and I've been poor. Being rich is better. All right.
Being rich is better is what Bill Maher says. Okay. So then yesterday, or the day before yesterday, when was this? There you go. This is yesterday. Bill Maher also does his podcast called Club Random. And he had Katie Couric on his podcast yesterday, on his Club Random podcast. And they get into a conversation about his monologue, about identity politics and saying that this is a class issue and the Democrats need to, you know, figure out that this is a class issue and all the stuff that you heard Bata say in the beginning and that he put in his monologue and took credit for it like it was his bright idea. So on his podcast yesterday, he and Katie Couric get into a conversation about that monologue. I want you to listen to this.
I mean, I saw your thing about identity politics. And I had an interesting reaction to it, because I think I agree to a certain extent that identity politics, like, it shouldn't be the default. Everything is race. Everything is gender. Everything is X, Y, or Z. On the other hand, I felt like you were being so binary about it that, you know, how can you not overemphasize identity politics, but yet still acknowledge systemic racism or sexism or things that exist in the culture that need to be addressed, but it's not all about that. In other words, are there degrees of this that can be acknowledged and appreciated without it automatically going to identity politics? Is that making sense to you?
Very
yeah,
little
but I
sense.
Didn't say it couldn't.
No, but I felt like the way you positioned it, it kind of ignored some of those things, at least the way I interpreted what you were saying.
Well, I mean, I don't think we have to all the time if we're having adult conversations
first come out and go, you know what, I think racism is bad. I just trust my audience after 30 years that they get that about me.
Yeah.
We're already there.
Yeah.
It's boring. Yes, we're there. We don't have to constantly assure of things that are, and again, there was nothing in it that I think, I mean, most of it was about how it's antiquated identity politics because mm-hmm. we're just so mixed together now.
Right.
You know, the idea came from the Beyonce doing the
Right.
Jelly Roll. He's this guy who's tattooed, but he's a rapper, but he's a country guy, and we're all mixed together. A fifth of all the marriages now are interracial marriage, and it's just mm-hmm. like the point of it was more, and all culture that's good for comedy, those kind of things. The point of it was more like, even if you want to do it, it doesn't make sense. And the bigger point was, this is a losing issue for the Democrats. It's they're losing.
That's the point.
Minority voters.
Right.
Losing,
I know
them.
That.
That's what's important to him.
You know, if you're in a hole, stop digging. And the, was it the Guardian or the Economist, somebody who I quoted when they were studying this, and they said, I forget the wording, but the gist of it was, when race becomes less important in people's lives, they vote on other things. Other things are more important. We should celebrate that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of progress, you know? And you can always look like the gooder person by saying, things are still bad. Yeah, things
See what I mean?
Always will be somewhat bad, I think. And mm-hmm. I'm just not gonna stop all the time to pause and yes, but that is what I believe. I firmly believe that racism exists and still exists. I mean, obviously lots of things. Mostly, if you look at it, it's in the economic sphere, like the net worth is crazy off. But I don't know how you remedy that. I mean, some people
you're talking about income inequality.
No, not what blacks and whites make today. That's it's against the law. Been for a long time to pay someone less because
right. No.
But I mean, I'm sure there is a difference because of course the legacy of our history. There's going to be huge disparities in everything. No, I'm talking about net worth, what you're worth. The white number is, I don't know what it is, but it's $100,000 or something, and the black is crazy low. Family wealth and net, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. from of course. Slavery and everything else, Jim Crow and keeping people down and just our despicable, horrible history. That to me is where the biggest need for equaling things out. But I don't know how you do it quickly. I think it's just something that, unless you believe in reparations, and some people do.
But I'm talking about overall income inequality and even taking race out of it. The huge chasm between the uber wealthy and
yes.
people who don't have $400 in an emergency.
Ridiculous.
It has never been such a stark divide.
Right.
And I feel to your point, Bill, the socioeconomic disparities are a lot, and class
resentment
is a lot, and anti-intellectualism.
Man, wow, she says it all. Listen to what Katie Couric says here. Wow.
Right. And I feel
what she's talking about, people, is Trump. This is what they're talking about. They're trying to figure out, what it is about Trump's appeal. Why are people still voting for this guy and clinging to this guy? What is his appeal, especially with working class voters? And listen to what Katie Couric is saying here. It goes right back to what Bata says. Listen to this.
Me is where the biggest need for equaling things out. But I don't know how you do it quickly. I think it's just something that, unless you believe in reparations, and some people do.
But I'm talking about overall income inequality and even taking race out of it. The huge chasm between
people like you,
uber wealthy.
That's you. uber wealthy.
And
yes.
people
that's,
who don't.
That's Bill Maher. That's Captain Kirk here. Uber wealthy. You guys are in the 1%, the probably the you know, 0.5% of earners in the United States of America. That's you. You are uber wealthy. Katie Couric. That's who you're talking about. Bill Maher, too.
Grow and keeping people down and just our despicable, horrible history. I think it's just something that, unless you...
The uber wealthy and yes. People who don't have $400 in an emergency.
Ridiculous.
It is. It has never been such a stark divide.
Right.
And I feel like, to your point, Bill, the socioeconomic disparities are a lot, and class resentment.
So it's class resentment. Listen to what she's saying, that it's class resentment, that the people that are working class, that the problem politically is not that they're working harder to maintain the same standard of living. Prices are going up on everything. It's harder to manage their households and their families, and they're having real problems living. It's not that. It's that they resent people like Katie Couric, and Bill Maher, that we resent them because they have all this money, that the class resentment. Listen to what she says. Wow, man, this is just disgusting is what it
huge
is.
Huge chasm between the uber wealthy and
yes.
People who don't have $400 in an emergency.
Ridiculous.
It has never been such a stark divide.
Right.
And I feel like, to your point, Bill, the socioeconomic disparities are a lot, and class resentment is a lot, and anti-intellectualism and elitism.
And anti-intellectualism. Wow. She ties in anti-intellectualism to this class resentment. And then she says, and elitism too. Yes, what you're saying right now is very elitist, Katie Couric. That's a huge problem. Your elitist mentality, that you think that you're better than people because you are a high earner. And in 0.5% of earners in the United States, that you are an elitist. I don't know if you know that, but you're definitely an elitist. That's what she's talking about here.
Is a lot and anti-intellectualism and elitism.
Not only are you resentful of them and their money, that's your problem. Not that you're struggling with high prices and inflation and struggling to make ends meet, and wages are not going up at nearly the same rate as inflation, and it's harder to get by. That's not it. You're resentful and you're anti-intellectual.
Is a lot and anti-intellectualism and elitism is what is driving many of these anti-establishment, which are Trump voters.
Right.
Or anti-establishment.
Those are Trump voters. Those are Trump voters. And he says absolutely. Listen to what he says. Absolutely. So he agrees with her 100% that people are anti-intellectual. That's why they're voting for Trump. Because they're anti-intellectual and they have class resentment, and these people are just angry that they haven't made the money that Katie Couric and Bill Maher have made in the entertainment industry. And both of these people are in the entertainment industry.
And elitism is what is driving many of these anti-establishment, which are Trump voters,
right.
Or anti-establishment
absolutely.
Voters. So I think that is a huge problem that we have to address. I mean, globalization and, you know, the transition from an industrial to a technological society. I mean, I don't know if you've ever been jealous of what someone else has. Or
y'all
resentful.
Are jealous. Y'all are jealous of Katie Couric. If you're complaining about inflation and you're struggling to get by, and you want to vote for Trump because the economy is horrible and has been horrible for 3 years, then you have class envy, you are anti-intellectual, and now she says you're jealous, is what Katie Couric says. You're jealousy.
To a technological society. I mean, I don't know if you've ever been jealous of what someone else has or resentful. It is such a corroding and bitter, almost bile feeling.
Right.
And I think that when people who are really struggling see people who have everything and are on top of that looking down on them, it is just a recipe for such anger and resentment and grievance.
And that's why y'all are voting for Trump. That's why y'all voting for Trump, because you're jealous at the fact that Bill Maher and Katie Couric make and have so much money, to have millions of dollars, and they're not hurt by the inflation. I mean, the inflation doesn't matter to them. They're fine because they have millions of dollars, and you're just resentful. You're just jealous. You're anti-intellectual. I mean, I was blown away when I saw this. Blown away. And then Bill Maher agrees with her. Now, Bata, she even says, and I want to play a little bit more because she reiterates the fact that you're jealous. Let's listen again.
I think that the eat the rich people would occasionally actually eat the rich. You know, they would actually go into somebody, some rich fuck's house, and drag them out and eat them. You would think that. And it just doesn't seem to happen. And the ostentatiousness that rich people have no problem indulging themselves in. I mean, just they really, look on Instagram though. It's not necessarily older people.
Mm-mm.
Just lots of young ballers and crypto assholes and people like that. And they just put it out there because the whole culture loves it. Because the people who are poor and struggling, they look at it and they don't go, let's kill them. They go, let's be them. I want to be that. Yeah.
Yes and no. I mean, don't you think that there's some who people who just feel that is not going to happen for me? And
yes, of course.
You know, and
yes.
I'm angry about it.
Yes,
and I'm
that's
angry
true.
About my
yes,
lot in
of
life.
Course.
And I'm going to take it out on
Joe
on
Biden,
sort of the coastal elites.
I'm going to take it out on the coastal elites. Listen to what she says, that some people, you know, they're angry about their lot in life. They're angry and jealous and class resentment and anti-intellectual. And they're going to take it out on the coastal elite by voting for Trump.
I think that there's some who people who just feel that is not going to happen for me. And
yes, of course.
You know, and
yes,
I'm angry about it.
Yes,
and I'm
that's
angry
true.
About my
yes,
lot in life.
Course.
And I'm going to take it out on sort of the coastal elites and the intelligentsia. And that's where I think.
And the intelligentsia. Listen to what she says, the intelligentsia. I'll debate you anytime, any place, Katie Couric, if you're so intelligent. You're so intelligent, so much smarter than everybody else because you make so much money and you're a coastal elite. You know, listen to what this woman is saying.
On sort of the coastal elites and the intelligentsia. And that's where I think a lot of this support is deriving from. I don't know.
That's where Donald Trump's support is deriving from. From people that are jealous of people like Katie Couric and Bill Maher. And that it is class warfare. Basically, the same thing that Bata was saying. You know, basically the same thing that Bata was saying, that the Democratic Party is a party for rich elites now. It is a party of intellectuals. The intellectuals like Katie Couric. And the rest of us are just, I mean, it's not that we're paying higher prices and the burden on us day to day is growing more and more burdensome, and yes, because we don't have millions of dollars like Katie Couric and Bill Maher, yes, we're having a tougher time struggling, but we're just jealous of them, that they have all the money and that they're smart and they're intellectuals, and we're just jealous, and that's why we're voting for Trump, because we want to stick it to the intellectual elite. You know, Bata was on the Bill Maher show 2 years ago, and she pegs people like Katie Couric perfectly. Again, talking about the class warfare that has been going on. And I never put this together. I can't believe that I never put this together. But in doing some research for this podcast, I've heard a few other people bring this to my attention. And then I was like, wow, I mean, I can't believe I didn't put that together. But when, if you look at when all of this racial tension and all of this focus on racial strife started, yes, it started in the Obama administration, but it started immediately after the 2008 crash, when you had the Tea Party going on, you had the you had Occupy Wall Street going on the left, and to drive a wedge in the American public to keep them from looking at the looters that were looting us on Wall Street. They wanted us fighting with each other, so they used Obama and his surrogates to foster this racial tension. Not only the Obama administration and his surrogates, the media focused a lot on racism. You remember all of the movies that were coming out that focused on racism in 2009. They were introducing this racial tension into the United States psyche to get us fighting with one another, divide and conquer, so we wouldn't pay attention to what they were doing on Wall Street and what they had just done to us. Another reason that we have all these problems is because of our media. People like Katie Couric, who you didn't get your money, Katie Couric, because you're so smart and you're so intellectual. You got your money because you're willing to lie and to get on TV and do whatever the corporations, the media corporations and the defense contractors want you to do and want you to say. That's why they paid you, because you are a yes woman. You will say whatever they tell you to say on NBC, and they pay you big money to say whatever they want you to say and sell their wars and sell their propaganda. That's why you're rich, lady, not because you're so intellectual. Listen to Bata here 2 years ago on the Bill Maher Show.
The abandonment of the working class. Journalism used to be a working class trade. It was a very low status job. Journalists lived in working class neighborhoods. They lived next door to factory workers and linemen.
Jimmy Breslin.
Exactly. Maybe a little bit more money than them. They saw themselves as outside of power, demanding justice on behalf of the little guy. Throughout the course of the 20th century, there was a status revolution among journalists, to where journalism became basically an elite caste. It is now the provenance of basically people who are very, very, very highly educated, who come from rich parents, who come from money. Journalists, I mean, of course, there are exceptions, but by and large, the pathway to becoming a journalist now is through the elites, through elite universities. And that has, as journalists ascended to the ranks of the elites, they abandoned the working class that they used to belong to. And I argue that today they're using a moral panic about race to distract from the ways in which they have benefited from income inequality in America.
So that was 2 years ago. 2 years ago that Bata says that about you, Katie Couric. That it's not that we're jealous of you. I have no respect for you, lady, because you have no dignity. You don't have a journalistic ethic in your body that you adhere to. So no, it's not that we're jealous of you. We don't have any respect for you people at all. You people will say and do anything for a dollar. So no, it's not that we're jealous of you. And we have some huge problems that Bata has been screaming about and has identified as far as class issues in this country, and the elite have used a divide and conquer tactic. Injecting race, injecting gender, injecting whole sexual stuff that's going on in the schools. All of these wedge issues to drive a wedge between the American people so we don't focus on what these predators are doing in New York City. And even Dwight Eisenhower warned us about this elite in his farewell address in 1961. And I mentioned it in the last podcast, but he refers to them as a scientific and technological elite. I want you to listen to a little bit of Dwight Eisenhower here, and we're going to start talking about Nixon.
Akin to and largely responsible for the sweeping changes in our industrial military posture has been the technological revolution during recent decades. In this revolution, research has become central. It also becomes more formalized, complex, and costly. A steadily increasing share is conducted for, by, or at the direction of the federal government. Today, the solitary inventor, tinkering in his shop, has been overshadowed by task forces of scientists in laboratories and testing fields. In the same fashion, the free university, historically the fountainhead of free ideas and scientific discovery, has experienced a revolution in the conduct of research. Partly because of the huge costs involved, a government contract becomes virtually a substitute for intellectual curiosity. For every old blackboard, there are now hundreds of new electronic computers. The prospect of domination of the nation's scholars by federal employment, project allocations, and the power of money is ever present and is gravely to be regarded. Yet in holding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific, technological elite. It is the task of statesmanship to mold, to balance, and to integrate these and other forces, new and old, within the principles of our democratic system, ever aiming toward the supreme goals of our free society.
So, he calls them a scientific and technological elite, and he says that if we are not careful, if we are not an alert and knowledgeable citizenry, then public policy itself, again, referring back to the military-industrial complex, that public policy itself could become captive of a scientific and technological elite, meaning that we, as the American people, would be captive to a scientific and technological elite. No, we're not jealous of you elitists, Katie Couric. We're angry at what you guys have done to us. We're angry. We're really angry. And the people are responding at the ballot box because that's the only place where people can feel their voices can be heard at this time. And that's the real secret behind Trump and Trump's popularity and the fact that his voters rally behind him is because they see him as a champion for them against. And I guess in some aspects, Katie Couric is right, you know, that that we do see Trump as, you know, a banana in the tailpipe, so to speak, of the elite. And the problem with this technological, scientific and technological elite, the elitism that we're dealing with today, George W. Bush, some people call you the elite. I call you my base. This is a huge problem here in the United States. And this is why the parties have ultimately switched. That's why all of the Democratic elitists and even those from the Republican Party, those elitists have abandoned the Republican Party and are now working to get Joe Biden elected because it's the new place that we're at. It's the new political reality here in the United States. So I was going to, that's a little preview. I was going to get back into talking about Nixon in this podcast, but I don't have enough time to pick that up. So we will pick that up in the next podcast. But I will tell you a little bit about Nixon. So Dwight Eisenhower, and I have a few more minutes before I play this out, but Dwight Eisenhower, oh no, you know what? I got plenty of time. I got maybe 10 minutes. So let's do a little bit of Nixon here, and then we'll pick up more when we come back on Friday. So Richard Nixon was Dwight Eisenhower's vice president. And vice presidents, the roles of vice president. Let me play again the... God, I'm kind of conflicted now. You know what? Let's pick up Richard Nixon on Friday so I can just pick it up from here, because there's more that I'm not... So what I'm going to do in the rest of this podcast, I am going to play a little bit of this clip. This is a clip from 2021, the Tucker Carlson Show, and he's got Bata from that we just saw the clips from her from the Bill Maher Show. He has her on her show in 2021, and I want you to take a listen to this clip. And then I'll play us out after this, and then we'll come back in the next podcast and pick up talking about Nixon.
So as we've told you many times before, as soon as the economy crashed to the benefit of the big banks, the New York Times, Washington Post, et cetera, started throwing the word racist around.
Yeah, so this clip was one of the clips that I was just telling you about that I've watched some clips of people bringing this to my attention and putting this together about how they started interjecting all this racism stuff right around 2009, Obama's first year, and how this stuff, the media, this was, you know, organized to get people from focusing on the banking elite, the people who had just crashed our economy, and start focusing on each other and these racial divisions. I can't believe I never put that together, but this clip was one of the clips that brought this to my attention.
It was almost like they were working on behalf of the oligarchs to divide the rest of us against each other so we wouldn't notice that a small group was getting super, super rich. Almost nobody in journalism ever mentions this. Batya Ungar Sargon is one of the few who does. She just went on CNN over the week. I feel a little guilty playing a clip from a rival network, but this is just too good to miss. Here's how it went.
The media's response to Youngkin's victory is literally the reason that he won, right? How did they respond?
There's 100 media's, 100 reactions. You're being pretty overly generalizing, I think.
Let me get more specific for you, okay? Because I have to say, I have to admit, having watched CNN all week, there's been a lot of very, very, very good genuflection on this front. But what happened right after the election was you saw host after host after host on MSNBC saying, oh, this is a victory for white supremacy, right? White supremacy wins again. Racism wins again when, you know, the lieutenant governor that Youngkin won with will be the first black woman to hold that job. When Glenn Youngkin managed to flip majority black districts.
Batya Ungar Sargon is the deputy opinion editor at Newsweek, also author of the new book, Bad News, How Woke Media is Undermining Democracy. She joins us tonight. Batya, thanks so much for coming on. I'm sorry to embarrass you with that clip.
Oh my gosh, Tucker, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, of course. So you say it's undermining democracy. What I think is interesting about your take on it is you take it to, I think, a deeper level. It's more than just annoying. There's a purpose to all this. What do you think the purpose is?
Well, I think you really nailed it in your opening, Tucker. You know, you started out by saying that we have this deep class divide in America that separates the people who are really feeling, you know, the inflation at the gas pump from the people who live in, you know, coastal cities who maybe don't drive, maybe they take Ubers, yes. Maybe they take the subway. And the history of journalism in the 20th century in America is the history of a class of people moving from one of those classes to the other, right? Journalism used to be a working class trade, and throughout throughout the 20th century, journalists became part of the American elites. And as they did so, they abandoned the working class of all races. And what we're seeing now with woke media is just the latest stage of that abandonment.
I mean, that's I've seen it up close. I think you're exactly right. The composition of newsrooms is completely different. But that's a perversion of the core mission of journalism. We always heard when I was 30 years ago when I started, you know, it's to afflict the comfortable and comfort the afflicted, to hold the powerful to account.
Absolutely. Know, the fifth estate. The fifth estate is what the fourth estate is what journalism and the media has always been seen in this country. And now the fourth estate has been bought up by the fifth estate, and the fifth estate are the oligarchs. They're the ones running everything. So they had to buy up all the media. They had to control the media again, which was done by Bill Clinton, and the Telecommunications Act is what deregulated the media and allowed these elites to gobble up all of the media and own over 90% of the media is in the hands of five different corporations. So that was part of the plan.
Like, it does seem like they're a Praetorian guard for the billionaire class. I'm sorry to overstate it, but it feels that way.
Yeah, you really see a lot of class solidarity right now among liberal elites. And I'm saying this as a lefty, Tucker. I'm coming at this from the left and feeling like, how did we abandon the working class, again, of all races? How did we become the side that comforts the comfortable and afflicts the afflicted?
All right, well, I'm going to tell you guys how you did that. I'm going to tell you guys how the Democrats lost the working class and how they became the party of elites. And we'll get back into this in the next podcast, pick up talking about Richard Nixon, but we're going to talk about a lot more. Hopefully nothing else comes to mind that will, you know, deter me over or distract me from getting into talking about Nixon on Friday. But thank you guys so much for listening, and then I will see you guys on Friday. Take care.